60. Marcus. They'd covered 140 miles. It was an incredible feat, given the obstacles they'd faced, but as Marcus stared at the map on the wall of the shack they currently inhabited, he feared it might all have been for naught. It was snowing. The lack of visibility had kept them from traveling to the next shelter, but if it continued to snow, it would be the carpet of white flakes on the ground, which was growing thicker by the hour, that would trap them. And with both daylight hours and their supply of meat dwindling, it wasn't a delay they could afford. As it was, they didn't have enough food to make it even halfway to the nearest Legion fort, which meant they'd be forced to try to fish or hunt right as the season shifted into winter. He rolled his shoulders so that his back cracked, then lifted the candle to stare at where the Via Hibernus intersected with the Via Mortis, which was the route through the Cybernese teeth. The mountain range was long and narrow, passable, in theory, in a matter of days, which was why Empire couriers used it, but only in the warmer months, and the men who undertook the journey were experienced climbers. "Where are all the Cybernese?" Tariana asked, her head bent over the repairs she was making on her clothing. "Mostly they're on the coasts or south of the teeth where the weather isn't as foul," he answered. "Only a few live on the plains during winter, and they're nomadic. They have to be, with such scarce game."
"Don't they have trouble with the wolves?"
"Yes." He scribbled a calculation on the wall with a bit of charcoal and frowned. "But they keep wolfhounds that run the packs off."
"Maybe we'll get lucky and come across a group of them. We've got coin, and I've a few hair ornaments that I'd part with for something different to eat."
"Hope that we don't." He set down the charcoal. "They might let you live, but I'd be dead the moment they determined I was Cell. Doubly quick if they figured out I was with the Legions."
"What are you talking about?"
Out of the corner of his eye, he saw Tariana look up from her mending.
"Cybern's been a Cell province for what, 200 years?
184. She snorted.
"Right. Specific dates aside, that's quite a few years of peace, no? And wouldn't there be a reward for them assisting you, of all people? You are fairly important, last I checked."
Marcus hesitated. The situation in Cybern, and in several of the other provinces, was not something the Senate wanted known. But given that the animosity of the Cybernese people toward Celandor was a very real threat to him, and to Tariana, by extension, he decided to answer. "There is no peace. Not in the interior, at any rate. They know helping a Legion officer would net them a small fortune in gold. They'd still feed me to their dogs if they got the chance."
"We traded down the eastern coast of Cybern last year," Tariana said. "I didn't even hear a whisper of dissent."
"Not surprised. The coast has a heavy Legion presence, and the larger cities are more integrated with the Empire. It's the places that only see the Legions and the Empire administrators once or twice a year that are the problem."
"How so?"
"It started with them refusing to tie their second-born sons, or rather claiming that there were no second-born sons." Sitting on an upturned log, Marcus tossed another piece of wood in the stove, wanting to be comfortable as he aired the Empire's dirty laundry. "They refused to keep birth records, hid the boys, or pretended they were the children of families with no sons. Cybern's not the only place it's happened. The Bardanese have turned evading child tithes into an art."
"Why is it that no one has ever heard of this?"
Tariana's eyes were a brilliant blue. Curious, he thought. And something else. "Because the last thing the Senate wants is anyone finding out that evasion is possible," he said, watching her expression. "It's in the Empire's best interest to have its people believe its power is absolute and uncontested, so any rumors to the contrary are vigorously quashed." Tariana's brow furrowed, but she said nothing. "But in Cybern, the Empire erred in how it handled the situation. Or rather, the Legatus dealing with it erred, and the Senate had to go along with his decision in order to keep from looking foolish. Or worse, weak." Extracting a whetstone, he ran it along the blade of his knife, waiting.
"Well,"
she finally demanded,
"are you going to tell me what he did?"
"Can't you guess?"
"Obviously, I can guess," she retorted. "But what good is you being a walking encyclopedia of facts if you aren't going to give me the full story?"
As you like. He sheathed the weapon, stretching one leg out in front of him. So, in circumstances of tax evasion, what one does is to go into the town or village or hamlet and have one of the Empire's administrators estimate how much tax is owed, and then take it, by force, if necessary. Obviously, the administrator estimates high, and the legatus in charge will usually turn a blind eye to his men taking a bit more to supplement their own income. The result is that the evaders end up paying more than they would have had to if they'd been law-abiding, thus dissuading them from repeating their crime. The blue of Teriana's eyes dimmed to gray.
The 37th do much of this sort of labor?
He made a face. Hardly. It's for legions on the verge of retirement or weak ones that can't handle a real fight. Anyway, the idiot of a legatus in charge thought that he'd be clever and apply the same practice to the Cybernese evading the child tithes.
You can't be serious.
I'm quite serious. In the places that didn't provide any children, he took all the boys who appeared the correct age, regardless of their birth order. He took them even in places where it was quite feasible they didn't have any boys to tithe that year. Rounded up 4 times the number of boys Cybern usually tithes, and delivered them to Campus Lessendor.
My gods.
The Senate couldn't precisely go returning boys without admitting what had caused the problem in the first place, he said. So they kept them. And since then, the resistance to the tithes in Cybern has only worsened, along with the refusal to pay taxes. Violence against the legions has increased. Whole patrols going missing, only for their heads to be found staked up for their comrades to find. It was a bloody mess, was what it was. For the number of men it would take to collect the boys and the taxes, it would cost the Senate more than it would receive in revenues. But they couldn't risk ignoring it, lest the problem spread.
When did this happen?
About 6 years ago, he answered, doing the math in his head. The boys they took, those that survived, anyway, will just have graduated from Campus Lessendor. Teriana rubbed her chin thoughtfully.
Doesn't the Senate ever stop to consider that arming hundreds of boys with a valid reason to hold a grudge against them might not be the wisest idea?
Every boy sent to Lessendor had a valid reason to hold a grudge against the Senate, but fear was a powerful motivator. For that to be the case, they'd have to see us as human beings, not as numbers. And I assure you, the majority of senators do not. Shaking her head, Teriana returned to her mending.
Your people are awful.
The Senate is not the sum of the cell people, he countered. It's a few hundred men. Even if you count the patrician class, we are talking about perhaps 10,000 out of 4 million.
It's those 4 million people who allow those few hundred men to rule them.
Those few hundred men control a military with over 200,000 soldiers. So I'm not sure allow is the correct term. The noise she made was noncommittal, but then she said,
if they did rise up and the Senate ordered you and yours to quell them, what would you do?
She lifted her face to meet his gaze.
Would you fight your own people? Would the rest of the legions?
He was saved having to answer by the sound of something heavy walking outside the shack.
Wolf?
Teriana whispered, rising to her feet.
They hadn't had much contact with the creatures since the two packs had clashed,
the Revenge Pack, as they'd taken to calling it, having been driven back. The new pack, plus those whose territory they'd passed through, would occasionally sniff around the shacks, but they showed none of the dogged determination to get inside, as the Revenge Pack. Holding his finger to his lips for silence, Marcus listened to the sound of the animal's tread.
Crunch, crunch, crunch.
A slow plod over the snow, of a much heavier beast than a wolf. Bear, he muttered. Damn thing should be hibernating by now.
It clearly doesn't agree,
Teriana said under her breath.
What do we do?
Marcus tossed several pieces of wood in the stove, building the fire. In response, the bear let out a loud grunt and leaned against the door of the shack. The heavy beams holding the door in place groaned, and with them watching in horror, the brackets began to give, the nails sliding out of the wood. Shit! Marcus flung himself at the door to brace it, knowing that it would do little good. But the second his shoulders hit the wood, the animal grunted and ceased its pushing. returning to its slow saunter around the shack. Heart hammering in his chest, Marcus moved to Teriana's side, both of them rotating as they tracked the bear's progress. It circled the shack twice, then stopped. A loud crack of wood split the silence. Teriana held her breath, waiting. "Please tell me that wasn't." Marcus broke off as the sound of chewing filled the air. Dawn greeted them with clear skies, a foot of fresh powder, and the shattered remains of the icebox that contained their supply of wolf meat, or rather had contained it, for the bear had devoured every last morsel.
"One less thing to carry, I suppose,"
Teriana muttered, then started in the direction of the distant mile marker of the Via Hibernus, her feet sinking deep into the fresh snow. Marcus didn't move. All they had to eat was the wolf meat that had been intended for breakfast and the few handfuls of grain that had been in the supplies at the prior shack. And against his will, his gaze shifted from Teriana to the teeth in the distance. He'd read about them, but words on the page did not do the mountain range justice. Unlike other places he'd been, where ranges were made out of peaks and valleys, and it was possible to find passes that led through them rather than over them, the teeth appeared like shards of shale standing on end, all razor-sharp ridges and narrow ravines that he knew dead-ended against sheer walls. There was no pass through them. The teeth were a maze that consumed men like it were a sentient beast, which was why the route through them wasn't on the ground. It was dangerous, but they could be on the far side of them in days. And on the far side, there were forests and rivers, which meant food. On the far side, there was civilization. "Teriana," he called. "This way." Then he started south, eyes on the first mile marker of the Via Mortis, the road of death.